Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care. Nila nijonne go shabothya, nijonne go shabothya. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanamatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Wait. This is Traditional Voices from the Eastern Door. I am Blue Eagle, and with the voices of Thunderbird, Turtle Woman, and Redstone, we present to you in this production the traditional values and the ancient spiritual teachings of our ancestors. It is important to mention that we are the Wabanaki, the people of the dawn. Our nation was one of the first to encounter the European people and their culture. It has been more than 500 years now, and the result of this exchange is clearly visible. The process of assimilation has devastated our existence here on Turtle Island and has left our people confused and nowhere to turn for help. We now look towards the only means available to sustain our existence and to maintain our identity as a people. In the recent past, a small group of people of the Wabanakis have taken it upon themselves to revive the spiritual ways, and with the kindness and generosity of our neighboring tribes, we have set forth with a commitment to do whatever is humanly possible to help put order and direction in our traditional ways. It is with this understanding our nation can build on strength and unity. Education is very important in the modern day. We hope to provide that in this production, as well as to send a message to all the people of the world. Taho. As I walk along the red ochre sands of the East Coast, the cool breeze that flows through my hair is brought in by the crashing waves at the breakwater. The rolling green hills that taper off into the distance remind me of the endless time that our ancestors lived in harmony with this land. I take a deep breath of cool, fresh air and think of my people of ancient ways. How strong they must have been, experts of survival, 10 times the strength of modern man, free to roam in an untamed wilderness, learning and adapting to the environment with each step, coexisting with nature rather than trying to tame it. Suddenly, I feel a rush of energy and my chest expands to think that I am a descendant of this proud and noble people, the Mi'kmaqs. Yes, the spirit lives, and as sure as the blood that flows through our veins, our ancestor spirit is alive in us. Taho.
Traditional Voices from the Eastern Door is the name of the commentary, Awakening to the Spirit, you just heard. The special cassette, Traditional Voices from the Eastern Door, features Wabanaki musicians George Paul, James Augustine, Donna Augustine, Joey Paul, and Ivan Paul. We also played the Mi'kmaq Honor Song from the Wabanaki drum, Eastern Eagle Singers, off their Sound of America Records cassette. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We began today's program with this feature in honor of my guest, Evan Pritchard, who, like me, is proud to be a Wabanaki, people of the Dawnland. The Wabanaki is a confederacy of four Northeast tribal nations, Mi'kmaq, Maliseet, Penobscot, and Passamaquoddy. Wolf Mountain Radio is very pleased to have Evan as our guest today. He is a very fine Native American scholar, author, and educator. Mr. Pritchard, who is of Mi'kmaq and Celtic heritage, is a very fine cultural historian and biogeographer of Native North America. I am honored that he and I are good friends as well as colleagues. We both share many of the same concerns, the protection of sacred Mother Earth and well-being of all life, concern for world peace, social, cultural, economic, and environmental justice, and the right of sovereignty and self-determination of indigenous peoples. In 1998, I had the pleasure to first meet Evan at an historic gathering entitled Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom and Healing. This event, co-sponsored by Radio for Peace International, was a conference and powwow that brought together many respected Native elders, spiritual leaders, and wisdom keepers from all over the world in order to counsel together. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, due to the request of the elders and traditional leaders to have their voices heard all over the world, I had the honor to host and produce Radio for Peace International's live broadcast and recording of the Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom and Healing speeches and interview sessions, including a presentation by today's program guest, my Mi'kmaq brother, Evan Pritchard. By the way, that very special Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom and Healing audio series are listed in RFPI's catalog and can be purchased from Radio for Peace International's USA's office, whose mailing address is Radio for Peace International, RFPI, P.O. Box 3165, Newburgh, Oregon, 97132, USA, or email Radio for Peace International at info@rfpi.org for more information. In 1998, Evan Pritchard founded the Center for Algonquin Culture, CAC. The center serves to protect, preserve, and restore the dignity and culture of every Algonquin nation. The center is a group of individuals across North America who are committed to exchanging a deeper knowledge of the culture, history, language, and wisdom of the Algonquin peoples. Center for Algonquin Culture founder-director Evan Pritchard is also a professor of Native American history at Marist College in New York, where he also teaches ethics and philosophy. Professor Pritchard is a prolific author. Evan's writings are very important contributions to Native American literature and public education. I highly recommend people read his publications, which I incorporate in my lectures at Florida Gulf Coast University. CAC's excellent website, www.algonquinculture.org, includes a page describing Professor Pritchard's books, which can be ordered from his publications division, Resonance Communications. Titles of his important publications, which we will be talking about, include several of these: Native American Stories of the Sacred, No Word for Time, The Way of the Algonquin People, Native New Yorkers, The Legacy of the Algonquin People of New York, Eagle Song, An Informal Honor Roll of Great Algonquins, Introductory Guide to Mi'kmaq Words and Phrases, and Aunt Helen's Little Herb Book, A Miramichi Indian Woman's World of Herbs. The ordering address for Center of Algonquin Culture's Residence Communications is P.O. Box 1028, Woodstock, New York, 12498, USA. Once again, to find out more about the Center of Algonquin Culture's Residence Communications to order Evan's fine books, please write to P.O. Box 1028, Woodstock, New York, 12498, USA. You can also email Evan for more information and ordering. The email is resman7777@earthlink.net. Once again, to contact Evan Pritchard by email, the address is resman, R-E-Z-M-A-N 7777 at earthlink.net. At this time, I really am very honored to welcome Evan Pritchard to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, can anyone talk with in to all of our relations. Another publication of yours that I'm very appreciative of, and I use this in my classroom, is the Tex Eagle Song, which is, I guess you could say, a compendium, if that's the correct American word, of great Native American people throughout our history. And of course, you and I, as modern day people, are very much concerned that so-called U.S. history excludes people of culture, is a term I use, people of color, especially us, quote, American Indians, Native American people. And your Eagle Song really lists contemporary Native people who have contributed much to not only indigenous society, but to the world in general. Would you talk about Eagle Song?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'd love to. Well, I'd like to incorporate that whole book into a larger book someday about the people of Manitou. One of the new developments is that in my World Values class at Marist, I'm assigning internet assignments in which students choose one from a list of Algonquin people's names. They sign in next to that name, and then they do an internet research project and just look up on the internet all about that person. I can see the reaction of the students is really wonderful, and that they really appreciate what they find out. Like, at first, they say, I've never heard of this person, this is dumb. And then they come back, and they're all amazed about, you know, it's somebody that they've heard about, such as Roy Rogers, or even, I think, Neil Young, whoever. These people have Algonquin roots, and maybe they're not experts about Algonquins, but they're serving humanity in some way, in ways that, for the most part, somewhat in the spirit of Algonquin people. And, of course, there's all these cultural variations. Jim Thorpe and...
You also include a number of contemporary brothers and sisters whom you might say unheard-of heroes. And I think it's very, very important because a lot of times when people think of American Indians, Native Americans, they kind of have a perhaps romanticized view that, well, those were people that lived in, you know, the 16, 17, 1800s, and that, well, you know, there aren't any nowadays or a few TV actors. This book we're talking about, Eagle Song, really is a fine text that highlights contemporary Native people in a variety of you might say, professions or fields. And I think that's really, really important, and I wanted to mention that and for you to, you know, to talk about this.
Well, sure, sure. And that's, again, in my classes, the students read aloud what they found on the internet so that everybody can share. And by the end of this class, I mean, people are amazed. I show this in my big map, you know, which I think you've seen, of all the Algonquin territories, and it's quite vast. And I say, well, what happened to all these people? And this is the answer, is that they're still here, and they're your favorite singer, your favorite hockey player, your favorite baseball player, whatever. They're still doing their thing, but they're not saying, I'm doing this as an Algonquin. They just say, I'm doing this as a human being.
Yes.
And so, yeah, there are lots of contemporary, and some of them, again, like you say, are not that well-known as Algonquins today. For example, one run for vice president, right?
And also you include a number of Native American people who are well-known in Indian country and even outside of Indian country in the North America and perhaps throughout the world. And that's also very important to remind people that we have modern-day leaders, spokespeople, that need to be respected and honored.
And by the way, I mean, I've already mentioned on this program some of our living Algonquin spiritual teachers. Manitouquat is still alive, you know, the medicine story.
Yes.
He spends a lot of his time in Europe, but he is Fanag, and he had a huge effect on the phenomenon we call the 60s. And a lot of the people in the 60s who are still alive, and I think there's also Buffy St. Marie, et cetera, who was Algonquin. A lot of this was influenced by Algonquins and Native Americans in general.
Yes.
And almost no one knows that.
Yes.
Scholars are surprised when they find out. Plus, a lot of our jazz players are Native, and some of them, you know, Algonquin roots. You know, I think also playwrights and sports athletes and musicians, there's quite a number of people living today who are Algonquin, like Willie Dunn, is kind of the Bob Dylan of the Micmacs, and, you know, his work is out there years
yes.
radio. And I've gotten to know him really pretty well in the last year or so. And it's funny, we have this place in Canada where we do these native, you know, gatherings with these, you know, musicians and teachers. And the guard in the building, you know, with his uniform and his, you know, nightclub or whatever, what do you call it, the billy stick?
Yes.
It's actually the great Willie Dunn, and nobody really knows that. It's very humorous to me, because he'll let people through, and he'll check their ID, and they don't realize they're speaking to the Bob Dylan of the Wabanaki. You know, he's a great songwriter. And then later on, sometimes he'll go in, when he gets off duty, he'll come in, and they'll introduce him, and it's very funny. It's one of those little things, you know.
Yes, and I wanted to mention, too, for our worldwide listening audience, that your book, Eagle Song, also honors, importantly, a number of contemporary Native American sisters and brothers who are in English are called activists that I know are my mentors and are responsible, at least philosophically, for helping me be a warrior for the well-being of Mother Earth and all our relations. For example, our sister Annie Mae Pictou-Aquash, as an example.
Blurred with mist and wind, I am amazed as I watch the violet heads of crocuses erupt the stiff earth after dying for a season. As I have watched my own dark head appear each morning after entering the next world to come back to this amazed. It is the way in the natural world to understand the place the ghost dancers named after the heartbreaking destruction. Anime, everything and nothing changes. You are the shimmering young woman who found her voice when you were warned to be silent or have your body cut away from you like an elegant weave. You are the one whose spirit is present in the dappled stars. They prance and lope like colored horses who stay with us through the streets of these steely cities. And I have seen them nuzzling the frozen bodies of tattered drunks on the corner. This morning, when the last star is dimming and the buses grind through the middle of the city, I know it is 10 years since they buried you. The second time in Lakota, a language that could free you. I heard about it in Oklahoma or New Mexico, how the wind howled and pulled everything down with a righteous anger. It was the women who told me, and we understood words, the right meaning of your murder. Later, after the slow changing of the seasons, that we have just begun to touch the dazzling whirlwind of our anger. have just begun to perceive the amazed world the ghost dancers into crazily, beautifully.
Let me ask you another question, Evan, and this is something that takes up a lot of my thinking, and that is really the future well-being of Indian country. I guess I'm fortunate, and perhaps you are, I can't speak for yourself, that at least in the past I've had the opportunity to travel to a number of Native American festivals, music festivals, cultural events, art shows, educational forums, and I've met some really very fine and incredible people, and many times I'm very enthusiastic about the future of Indian country. But in many ways, I see that also as an iceberg, where there's still a large segment of Indian country, in a sense, below the surface, where drugs, alcohol, poverty, unemployment, all the negative social indicators are still very prevalent, no necessarily fault of our own. We are in a time now in the 21st century where the rate of disappearance of our native languages are really rapidly declining. The number of young people who seem to really want to know our cultural history in some cases is declining. I don't want to be too pessimistic here, but part of the purpose of Wolf Mountain Native Radio, besides educating and informing the general public to have better respect and appreciation and understanding of indigenous culture, is also to try to reach out to our next future generations. And since I've talked to you, you might not know that I've had the opportunity to spend a lot more time, quote, working, unquote, with young people, mentoring a number of Native young people, some doing radio and other. While I'm hopeful on some days, I'm also quite alarmed and concerned that unless our young people take things seriously, in a few more years, we're going to really be at a serious point where it's going to be harder for our culture to survive, especially with the passing of many of our traditional elders who did grow up with a connection closer to Mother Earth and closer to our wisdom keepers. What is your comment on that?
Well, for our native children, it's important that they learn the languages, and I've been working on several language programs. One is, of course, the Munsee, in larger sense, Lenape languages, and several reservations around North America of Lenape have adopted my approach for children because I use the phonetics, using the English letters. You know, this has been a really wonderful thing because that is a, Munsee is very endangered, and Unami is actually considered, they said there's no longer any fluent speakers, but we're working on teaching the basics. And of course, the Mi'kmaq program that I did with Steve Augustine has been around for 20 years, and I've been told that they see Xerox copies of that floating around in all the schools up there. Penobscot, as I worked on the Penobscot
yes.
language, and this is yet to be completed. So, you know, our local Wappingers dialect is, you know, someday I hope to reconstruct because that is almost completely lost. But these are good things for the children on the reservations to learn their language because it's a roadmap to the culture and gives them a sense of pride. But it's also somewhat difficult. But also, you know, going to sweat lodges with legitimate medicine people that they know in the community, you know, is important. Off the reservation, it's a little different. One of the reasons I go through the trouble of, you know, publishing these books about Algonquin culture is that I figure that they're on the shelves, and the young people, teenagers, you know, who are curious, hopefully will find these books on the shelves. But it's hard to get the books on the shelves. You know, there's all this politics, even, you know, in bookstores.
Yes.
And I'm sure that our friend White Deer of Autumn occasionally runs into this kind of thing, too. You know, the idea is to get those books on the shelves because you don't know who might pick them up. It's not that it's for white people or, you know, Chinese people or, you know, whoever.
Yes.
To read. It's that our people, some of them will only find it in the public bookstores. You know, so that's part of that. But also, beyond that, it can't be done through the media. It has to be done one-on-one. And, of course, I go to schools a lot, and where there's schools, I often find three or four Native American children, and they're really motivated and interested in participating and helping me sometimes with my presentation. And I just let them help. the greatest way for them to learn.
Well, I sincerely thank you for your comments this morning.
Imagine there is a radio station working for a better world, social justice and human rights. Independent broadcasting 24 hours a day. Radio for Peace International, Costa Rica. We are giving voice to the voiceless.
My guest today on Wolf Mountain Native Radio is Mi'kmaq Wabanaki scholar Mr. Evan Pritchard, director of the Center for Algonquin Culture. He is also a friend of mine, and we are honored to have him again on Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Earlier, we featured a poetry song from Joy Harjo's Silver Wave Records 1997 CD, Poetic Justice, Letter from the End of the 20th Century. The song was entitled For Any Made Picture Aquash, whose spirit is present here in the dappled stars. Evan, my next question is the topic of sovereignty and self-determination for Indigenous peoples. As you know, this is one of the major concerns of us here at Yaikidishi Native Center and Native peoples everywhere. Wolf Mountain Radio has reported on many tribal peoples' struggles all over the world for sovereignty and self-determination since we started broadcasting in 1979 on WMEB in Wabanaki territory. Most listeners have also heard our coverage of the efforts of the world's indigenous peoples to be heard and respected in the international community through the United Nations. In particular, our programs about the United Nations Working Group on Indigenous Peoples and the Draft Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Wolf Mountain Radio has also covered the annual UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues sessions. So would you please share your comments on this important subject of Indigenous people's sovereignty and self-determination?
This is going to become the critical issue in the next 6 years, I'd say, in that one of the things that the United States government in particular can do is to make it very difficult for people who are dependent on, you know, the government funding directly from the government, from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, you know, for cultural programs. I mean, to me, it's a little bit questionable practice to depend on, you know, the United States for advancing programs which advance our belief system. So it's very important that we have self-determination and that we start now in taking control of the preservation of our languages and defining what our correct languages are and how they should be correctly spoken, defining our own histories, and what is correct in terms of our history and who should be teaching them. I've seen this in some of the federally recognized tribes, which is really wonderful because they have the most to lose, but they're very courageous. But also among the state recognized tribes, nations are somewhat also at risk, and I think a lot of them are taking that initiative already. And for example, the Shinnecock are taking a lot of initiative, and I'm closely involved with their council, advisory council, and the tribal council. They have been taking some very bold moves to, you know, try to get federal recognition at the same time to advance their own self-determination. And a judge recently found that the Shinnecocks were deserving of federal recognition. And yet, of course, this doesn't mean anything in terms of actually being awarded that. And there are things that are happening with Shinnecock in terms of, you know, claiming rights that they've been afraid to claim in the past. You know, all of it kind of in the media, you get sometimes this kind of distorted version, but you have to go to the source. But in terms of languages, this is, of course, I've spent 15 years or so my life trying to preserve Algonquin languages, and with a lot of interference and with a lot of media, a lot of, mostly I'd say on the internet, is where these kind of pseudo scholars, you know, take pot shots at anybody who's trying to preserve Algonquin languages from a point of view of self-determination.
Why is that, sir?
It's so easy to go on the internet and say some stupid thing about, oh, this guy's conjugating this word wrong, because who's going to know? Because, in a sense, our Algonquin grammar, I mean, there is a very complex form of grammar which is correct, but most Algonquins today have a very loose grammar which reflects our values as being very flexible people. And so, you know, it's an easy thing to go on the internet and say somebody's not conjugating a Muncie word, you know, in that particular situation, because, I mean, it's even hard for me to categorically say that, you know, not possible. But generally, it's, you know, it's such an easy thing to go on the internet and say something totally irresponsible, and often anonymously. In terms of the media, I've been very blessed in that the media generally likes, you know, the mass media has generally been very kind to me. And in cases where it hasn't, it's been upfront, you know, head-on debate. For example, I had a wonderful debate on New York and Company, Leonard Lopate show, and we went at it, but it was all above board and all in good spirit of forensic competition, so to speak. And I feel he acknowledged that I won the debate. As a matter of fact, I think I sold about 50 copies of Native New Yorkers that very day. In terms of the internet, people, you know, there are people out there who are just despicable kind of people who knows what they're about, but they just post these crazy things and claim that, you know, I misquoted people.
And some of that, if I may interrupt for a moment, is, without being rude or racist, but I will say truthful from my viewpoint, white academics, a lot of them archaeologists, anthropologists, linguistics, who presume to know more about Native American culture, history, tradition, philosophy than those of us who are from different nations, tribal nations. I think it's only been within the last perhaps 20 years or so that there have been a number of Native scholars now being published, and a few of us, quote, teaching at universities, right, unquote. And it's a battle. I know in my own field as a Native American ecologist, a lot of times I'm battling white academic environmentalists and professors of so-called environmental science with their unwillingness to understand indigenous knowledge on caring for the earth, traditional systems of land management, for example.
That's right.
So I would imagine in your area of education, you experience that also. I just wanted to bring in a personal note on that.
Well, yeah, and it's almost humorous in that I've had exchange of emails with some white professors in colleges saying that there are no Algonquin people at all. And I mean, it reaches a point of absurdity. I mean, there, come on. Based on non-determination entirely, in that, who are we to say that we exist, that the white, you know, what we call the mainstream of scholarship has been that there is no term for Algonquian-speaking people as a culture, therefore it doesn't exist. And the reason there's no term is because they didn't want there to be a term. So you see, it becomes totally absurd.
Yes, and I was just going to briefly mention, again, because we are a worldwide listening audience here, as you were talking, I was thinking about one of the most special persons of the 20th century in Indian country in the world, and that is beloved Vine Deloria Jr.,
oh, yes,
who passed in the spirit world and who took a lot of flack in the so-called academic community as well.
What's going to happen is eventually there's going to be some effort to try to change the standards of defining Native American, and the government may decide to say that unless you speak your language fluently and unless you have, you know, say an eighth or a quarter blood quantum, you are no longer Native American, you are no longer eligible for any of the treaty rights so you are no longer going to be able to live on your reservation. Just saying that there's, you know, this could happen.
Well, it is, in fact, it is happening and has been happening, at least from my point of view. If you look at the ridiculous game of, we mentioned it briefly earlier in our conversation, the whole process of so-called federal recognition and the games that, you know, Washington and Ottawa have been playing for many, many years, and just basically during the Eisenhower-Truman administration with a stroke of a pen just say, well, you folks aren't indigenous peoples anymore. I know of a number of nations that have spent 20-plus years proving and documenting whom they are in black and white on paper, and yet it's still no good in terms of the present political climate in Washington.
Well, what I'm saying is that I believe it's going to get worse, and that means that the fluency issue is going to become a major issue. And of course, you know, the residential schools have room and fluency percentages, but the thing is that we need to all take, you know, that self-determination in hand and try to maintain our identities and our languages by ourselves, and that means we have to share our resources a little more generously with all the, you know, the different Native American efforts for self-determination and language preservation. Because imagine the scenario where a white, you know, professor from, say, Rockefeller University or something goes in and says to a Native American, you're not speaking your language correctly, you no longer are a Native American. I mean, this is the worst-case scenario, but, you know, this could happen.
Yes, and not that I want to be an alarmist, but I would like to say, again, this is worldwide radio, international radio, as so-called energy and natural resource issues heat up even more, the scarcity over fresh water, the privatization of water, the fight over hydrocarbon oil, for example, we are seeing how the United States government and Canadian government are taking over tribal territories to exploit land and natural resources. ENWA, with the Gwich'in that Yakutishi Native Center has been, you know, very much involved trying to help the Gwich'in Athabaskan people defend their traditional homeland. That's just one example of the growing natural energy resource wars, and that is, in my mind, why a lot of tribal nations have not been acknowledged in so-called federal recognition, and why a lot of tribes are now undergoing tremendous assaults. If I remember correctly, for example, under the Bush-Cheney regime, the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, a lot of the requirements of environmental impact studies used to be part of the responsibility of the U.S. government. Trust responsibility of protecting native lands is no longer a requirement of law, and so Indian tribes are having to defend themselves against some of the biggest multinational energy companies in the world. You know, we're really being victimized or raped for coal and uranium, for water, for timber, and it's getting worse, as you said.
Well, I want to mention that there's a man, I think his name is Bernard Colson, who wrote a book called Thy Will Be Done, and it was published not that long ago by HarperCollins. It is a very large book and has, you know, tremendous effort of scholarship. He, you know, has a New York Times background. I think he's won some awards. And, you know, you don't hear about this book, but it is really something. And I just say, you know, in terms of this whole issue of oil versus indigenous people, most people don't know anything about that, and they wouldn't make that connection. What's the connection between indigenous people, say, in Venezuela and oil? Well, you know, they have the rights to the land where the oil is, and if you want to get the oil, you know, if you have to kill them all, you're going to do it. You know, so this book shows how these things were accomplished over the past 40 years, and I'm sure he's been harassed for it, and I'm sure the book's been taken off many shelves. Thy Will Be Done is a masterpiece of reportage and research. Whether it's all true or not, I mean, it would take 50 years just to go through all his footnotes. So I recommend that as a beginning point. And then once you've read that, then you can understand what's going on in Venezuela. And by the way, because I know that Chavez, you know, is particularly unhappy with the United States, you know, whatever, and part of the reason why the country is going towards Marxism, whatever, is in protest, and it's a messy, unstabilizing situation, which I think could have been prevented. I think it was predictable, given all that kind of I don't know what you want to call it even, just interference. This is not good foreign policy, and neither is the way that Iraq was handled good foreign policy. And of course, you know, I research ancient civilizations. I'm very interested around the world in, you know, Sumeria and the Minoans and the Mycenaeans. And the Sumerians crashed in, they had a wonderful culture 3000 BC. 2000 BC, they were completely decimated, and a lot of that was environmental policy was foolish, and foreign policy was foolish, and those two things together brought them down and created almost desert, inhospitable situation in Sumeria, which is now Iraq, by the way, from a great civilization, and I would hate to see that happen here in the United States, but we're losing out on foreign policy, losing out on the environment. And it doesn't take, you know, a great scholar to know that. It's just, we feel it. We all feel it.
In legislations on the desk of a do-right congressman. Now, he don't know much about the issue, so he picks up the phone and he asks advice of the senator out in Indian country, a darling of the energy companies who are ripping off what's left of the reservations. I learned a safety rope. I don't know who to thank. Don't stand between the reservation and the corporate bank. They'll send in federal tanks. It isn't nice, but it's reality. Bury my heart in wounded knee. Deep in the earth. Companies who want the land, and they've got churches by the cousins want to guide our hand and sign our Mother Earth over to pollution, war, and greed.
Get this quick!
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Deep in the earth.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Cover me with pretty lies.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
We get the federal marshals, we get the covert spies, we get the liars by the fire, and we get the FBI. They lie in court and get nailed, and still Peltier goes off to jail.
The nature of the reservation.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Transfer in secret.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
The murder and intimidation.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
My girlfriend Annie Mae talked about uranium. Her head was filled with bullets and her body dumped. The FBI got off her hands and told us she died of exposure. Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Deep in the earth.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Cover me with pretty lies. We learn to crawl, and now our history gets written in a liar's scrawl. They tell you, hey honey, you can still be an Indian. Don't ask why on Saturday night. Oh, bury my heart in wounded knee.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Deep in the earth.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Cover me with pretty lies.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
Bury my heart in wounded knee.
An East Coast tribe seeking federal recognition fears ties to one Washington lobbyist firm could hurt their approval process. Members of the Mashpee Wampanoags of Massachusetts paid $50,000 last year to the firm led by Jack Abramoff, the D.C. lobbyist accused of bilking millions of dollars from tribal nations. Now two former lobbyists who have left the firm continue to represent the tribe. Scott Ferson is the spokesperson for the Wampanoags.
It is not our belief at all that any of the implications that are made in the current situation will have any impact on the review of the petition.
Officials from the Bureau of Indian Affairs will meet with the Mashpee Wampanoags next week. A preliminary decision on their federal recognition status is expected this spring.
You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you heard prior to our Yatkidichi Native Center program identification was Buffy St. Marie's classic song, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. We also featured a brief National Native News segment about the infamous lobbyist Jack Abramoff, whom, as you just heard, in addition to ripping off a number of Indian governments involved with gaming, he was involved with the Mashpee Wampanoag application process for so-called federal recognition. Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio. Please listen next week for Program 4 of my interview with Mi'kmaq Wabanaki scholar Professor Evan Pritchard, director of the Center for Algonquin Culture. For more information about the center, please visit Center for Algonquin Culture's website at www.algonquincenter.org. That's the Center for Algonquin Culture's website, www.algonquincenter.org. Or write to CAC, P.O. Box 1028, Woodstock, New York, zip code 12498, USA. We shall conclude today's program with a flute song by Ed Wind Dancer off his CD, Breath of My Soul. The name of the song is Here I Am, Creator. Until the next Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinon Wantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Thank you.